This is an ABC podcast. This is the WA Country Hour with Belinda Varischetti on ABC Radio WA.
Good afternoon. Glad you could be here today. And we'll be checking in on the weather with a cross to the Bureau just after 12:30 today. The rain in the last 24 hours or so, a little bit hit and miss. Richard Hudson in the studio to go through those details, and we'll see if there's any more on the way for Western Australia too. That's after 12:30 today. Also today, the owner of a southwest-based trucking company says its supplies of hay are really close to running out. Anna Noakes will be along shortly to look at that and just how busy the company is, and others like hers busy at the moment trying to get those much needed hay and fodder supplies to farmers who really need it. And just before one, off to Katanning for the results of the sheep market. Numbers were almost double last week's numbers. Almost 8,000 sheep and lambs penned for sale at Katanning today. Tracy Kilner with the details before one. 12:06 here on the Country Hour. And to start today, a $50 million expansion of a cold storage facility in the southwest has officially been opened. The Craig Mostyn Group's new state-of-the-art facility at its V&V Walsh plant aims to improve efficiency and competitiveness in export markets for beef, lamb and mutton. The State Agriculture Minister, Jackie Jarvis, was in Bunbury to open the facility.
The new facility, I've had a sneak peek, I've had a look through, it is phenomenal, state of the art, probably the only one of its kind, I think, in the state, Brent tells me. And so it is fantastic to have a facility like this in regional Western Australia. This facility will enable the southwest to continue to meet customer demand, both locally but also overseas. The Cook government is proud to support Craig Mostyn Group. As we heard, it's a successful private business, but we do obviously like to invest in opportunities that help diversify our economy. So in 2018 and 2020, there was a total of $825,000 in grants to support V&V Walsh in obtaining some new equipment to support information flows. Obviously a drop in the ocean compared to the $50 million you've invested here. This facility is the only abattoir in Australia with a China chilled lamb licence. And as we heard when I was being shown around, you know, China is a major market. There are lots of more opportunities. The only thing that's stopping us selling more chilled and frozen meat to the world is processing capacity. And thank you to Craig Mostyn Group for this investment here to actually grow that market. New and diversified overseas markets give WA farmers confidence to invest in their future, which is what the industry really needs right now.
Agriculture Minister Jackie Jarvis at the opening of V&V Walsh's new $50 million cold storage facility yesterday. 12:08. Brent Dancer is the general manager of V&V Walsh. He believes the new facility takes the company's market competitiveness to the next level.
That's a fully integrated cold store facility attached to our existing processing plant down in Bunbury. And so it's an ability for us to showcase the latest in technology, in automation, and bring what was previously a very manual process into a state-of-the-art facility. We need to be competitive on export markets. Our growth and our ability to create confidence in the market is in export, and so we've got to be efficient as possible in what we do and make sure that we're producing the best quality product to market. So by having a facility of this nature attached to our facility, fully integrated, means that what we produce is of the absolute best quality, and the speed at which we can get it to market to make us the most efficient and most competitive means that we're really setting ourselves up for success moving forward.
I'm here today with Brent Dancer, who is the general manager of V&V Walsh, but I'm also joined by the CEO of the Craig Mostyn Group, Wayne Cross. Wayne, when was the last time that you took on an expansion like this one?
Look, 2 years ago, we finished the second tranche of the acquisition of the V&V Walsh Group, which was $50 million. And in the last 12 months, in our 100th year of operations as a family company, we've committed $100 million to capital growth expansions across the group. This project is a $50 million project, so it's our biggest and it's the first one to finish. And so when we look forward into our five-year plan, there's plenty more projects we're keen to invest in because we've got a lot of confidence in the sector in which we're operating.
Some words that you just said there, it's major, it's one of the biggest, it's a long-term investment, you've been looking at it for 5 years, but right now a lot of what primary producers are saying is that they're looking to exit strategies because of current market conditions. What gives you the confidence to continue on with an expansion like this?
We've got a lot of demand from a lot of our markets around the world, and in the last couple of years we've been working really, really hard to diversify our markets. We're one of the only producers in Australia with a chilled name license to provide China. And from our perspective, we absolutely recognise there's uncertainty out there at the moment. Some clarity from the federal government on live export will be very much welcomed so that our farmers can actually plan their businesses appropriately. And with that, no doubt some people will lose a bit of confidence, but we're absolutely, given the demand we see out there for high-quality Western Australian product, we're absolutely convinced that there's a future in this, and we're prepared to continue investing at this site to grow that business.
You touched on what you want to see from the federal government going forward next week. It's quite timely. We've got the state budget being handed down. The following week is the federal budget. What's some things that you'd like to see come out of that?
Oh, look, as a business, it's challenging. In my 20-odd years of running companies, this has been one of the most challenging years. For us, some of the challenges we face is there's been, this year, we've had a 100% increase in the cost of utilities across our business. And, we hope that there'll be greater support in that area from the government. Also, we're labour constrained still. We've improved it dramatically since COVID. But anything that we can do to help get skilled labour into our industry and into the country quicker will very much help us to operate our plants at full capacity.
Today at the opening of this facility, the Minister Jackie Jarvis was here to announce some further funding, $700,000. How do you manage that?
Well, actually, the state government have been very, very good at supporting industry with grants. And so that grant came about a couple of years ago for $700,000. Now, recently on one of our pork projects, which is just getting up, they actually funded $5 million. And there was, I think, 20 or 30 companies in WA that got support through that tranche. So the government, local government in Western Australia, is absolutely helping industry sort of get things going. And so, we're quite pleased with the support, particularly we're getting from Minister Jarvis.
I think a big question on farmers' minds, that if you're increasing your cold storage capacity, are you then going to be increasing your processing capacity?
Yeah, look, we're certainly looking at ways that we can be best in market, best in export market, as well as domestically. We've got a number of projects on our pipeline over the next year, 2 years, 3 years about processing capacity. So it's all about, both from an environmental perspective, being a core to what we want to do moving forward to grow our capacity of our plant, as well as unlocking some of the key pinch points in our facility to grow that capacity as we have abilities under our licences. So we've got every intention to keep growing our capacity over the coming years.
What are some of those pinch points that you're referring to?
As we work through and as we've grown at the speed we've grown, we've got some work that we need to do both from an environmental point of view. So our next major strategic project will be around wastewater and wastewater management, and we want to ensure that what we do is sustainable and long-term sustainable. So we'll be building a state-of-the-art facility to help manage that moving forward. And then we'll move back into the plant to look at ways that we can bring more automation, more efficiencies into the way we process our lamb and beef. Again, to get better yield, better outcomes from both a producer and a final market perspective.
Do you think that this is going to create new jobs?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you look at the actual facility, it's actually made us more efficient. There's only 6 people running this facility, and there was over 20 sort of doing that work before. But we've been able to redeploy those staff further down the value chain. If we look at the pipeline of projects on the blueprint for this site, there could be in excess of 100 different roles created over the course of our next 5-year plan as we sort of grow and evolve to meet the needs of different markets.
What about, though, if you're going to be then looking at expanding and putting on new jobs, new roles, have you thought about worker accommodation? Have you thought about worker availability? Because I look at someone like WAMCO, for example, in Katanning, they've purchased a place for that. Is that something you're considering as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, particularly at Lindley Valley Pork, which we operate, we've just leased the El Cabello Resort on top of the hill up there. So if anyone wants to return to El Cabello for a holiday, they just need to come and start working for us. But it is a real challenge, and we've got multiple leases, and it's something that's on our list of priorities, and we just work with, you know, the local providers to get what we can. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we would expect that over the course of the next 5 years, some of the housing pressures, which are real now, we would expect that to start to alleviate.
Mm-hmm. Brent, where is the demand coming from for your product?
I think the beauty of our product, we've got a multitude of markets that we can balance between. Obviously, China's been mentioned, and we are lucky enough to have one of the only chilled licences into China for lamb. But we've really tried to diversify our markets now. So we're really strong in the Middle East. The US market, which has been really struggling throughout COVID, is starting to show some green shoots and really starting to show some improvement. And the likes of Japan and Korea that have been dormant and quiet because they haven't been being pushed in the market are starting to have to fight for product. So we're seeing some improvement in those export markets, and it's just a matter of time. As each one ebbs, the other flows. So at the moment, unfortunately, China's really struggling and probably been in its lowest point for some years. But, you know, while they're starting to struggle, the Middle East is growing. The US is starting to show signs. Southeast Asia, Vietnam, the Philippines, Cambodia, some of them are really starting to show some promise that probably wasn't there 3 or 4 years ago. So, you know, it's the onus is on us to get out there and really hit the pavement hard and sort of develop and open up those markets, grow those relationships, just to create new homes and new opportunities for the local produce.
What do you think, Wayne, like from primary producers you've been speaking to, people on the ground, what are people saying that you're talking to? How are they actually feeling at the moment?
Look, it's in Western Australia, it's tough. The costs have been tough this year. The dry conditions have been really tough. The cost of feed and getting feed at the moment is tough. Giving a bit of certainty to people that, one, we're investing into the business, two, we're working as hard as we can to develop other markets is important. Three, we see green shoots in pricing coming through some of the international markets, which will only help the situation here. And fourth, you know, getting a bit of support and clarity from the federal government on what they intend on doing with live shipping will actually just put confidence into the market. And when people have got confidence and clarity, they can actually plan their business and get on with the job of what everyone wants to do, and that is profitable farming.
Wayne Crofts, he's the Chief Executive Officer of the Craig Mostyn Group, and you also heard from Brent Dancer, the General Manager of V&V Walsh, both having a talk to Kate Forrester at yesterday's official opening of the $50 million cold storage facility at V&V Walsh. That's the southwest plant in Bunbury. 17 past 12.
You're part of the Country Hour with Belinda Varaschetti on ABC Local Radio WA.
We'll get to the news headlines around about 12:30, then looking at the weather conditions around Western Australia. First, though, a southwest-based trucking company says its supplies of hay could run out in about 6 weeks as demand for feed intensifies. Anna Noakes from Glenbrae Hay Transport has been trucking feed across the region for 40 years. She says they're working around the clock trying to meet demand, which is at an all-time high.
Insanely busy, very high demand. We only had this once before, which I think was about 2010-11. We had a dry season that year, but I don't think it was as bad as this one.
How much hay are you delivering on a weekly basis to people?
About 20 to 25 loads, speed double loads of 40 tonne, 38 tonne.
And is that up or down on previous years?
Oh, way up. People have just exhausted their own hay supplies. It was a dry winter, and so consequently a lot of farmers were down on hay to start with, and had to start feeding early because the rain pretty much chopped off in September. Really haven't had any rain to speak of since then. So everybody's own hay supplies were exhausted months ago.
People are still chasing hay. Are you able to source it from suppliers so that you can then deliver it on to other people? How's that market on your side looking?
That market has dried up. We cannot find any more hay now, hay or straw for that matter. It's just not out there.
What does that mean for your business? Can you continue to operate? Obviously, you require a level of supply in order to deliver to people. So what happens to the logistics side of things? How long do you have to operate?
Well, we have hay that people have bought that we still have to deliver because people are getting some dairies are getting a load of hay a week, two loads of hay a week. So we still have that in store to deliver. But it's just any new people now that are ringing searching for feed, we just can't supply them.
And what does that mean for the winter months? Is that a time that you would also normally be delivering, or does that peter off in a standard year?
It is quieter, but people still look for that roughage when it's cold and wet. And I just really don't think there is going to be anything available then.
There was a meeting in Yawnup a few weeks ago, and they asked for the state government to do a stock take on basically all the feed that was left in the state. Is that something that you've been kept in the loop about? Do you happen to know whether that stock take's been done or if there is any feed left in the state?
Oh, I have no idea, but I would love to see that list. We will run out probably, well, we have run out of feed for any new suppliers, but for our regular suppliers, we've probably got enough to keep them going probably another 6 weeks.
And then what happens after that 6 week period?
There's no feed. I don't know. What happens? This is where the state government needs to be doing something for farmers.
One of the recommendations at the meeting was to put a hold on exporting feed out of the state into the eastern states to allow for farmers here to gain access to that feed and fodder. As someone in the transport industry, does that seem like a reasonable or realistic option that could have been implemented?
Look, I can't speak for exporters, but I really don't see how that can work. Exporters have a business to run as well. They have contracts to fill. They can't just back out of those contracts. So they need what they have to fulfil those. So this is a question you would have to ask the exporters. But some of them have been very helpful and have let some hay go already. We have carted hay out of export plant, but that's now dried up as well, the amount that they can let go. So, yeah. I don't know that that's an option.
Obviously, you're speaking to your customers on a weekly basis. What are the stories that you're hearing from them?
Oh, everybody's struggling financially and mentally. It's a huge drain on people. It's a worry just knowing, you know, they've all got animals to feed, and especially dairies, they can't just dry them off. They've got to milk these cows and they need feed for them. So they are the ones that we are prioritising really to try to get through. So, yeah, people are very desperate.
Anna Noakes, who's the owner of Glen Brae Hay Transport, speaking to Andrew Chounding. And the state government says a stock take of available hay by the Dry Season Task Force is underway and will be completed before the task force meets again, and that'll be this week on Friday. It's meeting every fortnight. 22 past 12. Well, meanwhile, the Stock Feed Manufacturers Council of Australia says there's plenty of grain available to produce pellets and mueslis for WA's livestock industries. Peter Nash is the council's industry development officer for WA. He's also the executive officer at the Grain Industry Association of WA and sits on the recently formed Dry Season Task Force. Peter, what is your assessment of the current stock feed situation in WA?
Belinda, I'm really happy to say that despite the dry season, there is no current risk to stock feed supplies. There's plenty of grain in the system to provide the basis for manufactured feed. Certainly straw and hay are becoming short in supply, and anyone that's buying manufactured feed will have noticed that the price of that feed is rising due to the current high costs of both grain, straw and hay.
Yeah, and I guess in a, you know, people understand that in a supply and demand situation like we're in at the moment, the prices are going to go up. Can you give us a sense of what those prices are today and how does that compare historically or to average prices? What are we looking at?
I can't, Linda. I'm sorry. I don't deal in that commercial side, so I actually can't comment on that.
So you can't give us any sense of where prices are at today?
Other than they're going up. No, I can't.
So who are the major players in the WA industry?
There's a number of major manufacturers. Westfeeds, Milnes, Thompson and Redwood and others will be known to most in the industry. And look, most of our big stock feed manufacturers produce pellets and mueslis to supply the state's intensive poultry, pork, sheep and cattle industries. But they also supply into the broadacre and to smaller landholders. As you'd appreciate, I guess, mostly in years like this when feed, paddock feed is scarce.
And all of those players, are they at full capacity currently?
The industry tends to operate at pretty much full capacity year round as a business model. So yes, they are mostly at full capacity. Perhaps some with some capacity to increase production, but only moderately.
And is it just supplying the domestic market, the WA market?
Primarily, yes. In our WA manufacturers are supplying mostly into our intensive livestock industries.
So they're all being catered for. But if you are a new customer in a situation on a dry farm in WA, you're looking for feed, and you make the call today and asking for feed, what would that wait period be like?
Well, that's an important point. If you anticipate that you're going to need supplementary feed and you're not an existing customer of a stock or feed agent, I would be talking to them now. There will likely be a 4 to 6 week delay from placing an order to being supplied with feed.
And I mean, can you remember the last time, Peter, that we were in a supply and demand situation like we are today?
Not of this intensity. It certainly has, with the southwest receiving so little rain and pastures running out or becoming scarce, and the quality of those running down. Yeah, this is a bit of an exceptional year.
And obviously it flows right through the supply chain. So for the manufacturers, and I think you made the point earlier, there's no problem kind of accessing the grain that they need to manufacture the feed at this point.
No, that's correct. There isn't.
So any chance that there's, I mean, have you been looking around at other states in case we reach a point here in Western Australia where we need that extra produce coming in? Is that a possibility?
Yeah, it certainly is a possibility, Belinda. The East Coast has the majority of Australia's manufactured stock feed is produced on the East Coast because that's where the majority of our intensive industries are. And collectively, there will be some capacity to increase production and to ship feed this way if required. That's not a cheap exercise, but it's the opportunity is there.
I mean, you've had a look at that as a backup plan. And when, at what point do you sort of push that button? What would need to come into play to make that worthwhile?
It's largely a commercial decision, Belinda. So when the demand is strong, that's when our existing manufacturers may look to import feed themselves to bring some across the border from the East Coast and to sell through their networks. Or it could be that the major stock feed agents, the retailers, go direct to the East Coast and buy from there. So the opportunity's there, but it'll be commercially driven. A really important point too, Belinda, is to just remind people that in terms of manufactured stock feed, that pellets and mueslies and also feed grain are really just supplements. They can't be fed alone to animals. So if you've not been using pellets or mueslies in the past and need them, just be wary that they must be fed with roughage as well, so pasture hay or straw. And if you're unsure about how to safely feed pellets or mueslies or feed grain to your animals, and also while ensuring, of course, that you get the best value from those, DPIRD's Agriculture and Food website has some useful information on this. All right, I'd encourage you to talk to your local DPIRD office or a vet or a stock feed agent for advice. You can certainly do harm if you feed straight grain or manufactured pellets or mueslies to animals without roughage available to them.
That's a really good point. I'm glad you made it. Thank you so much for being part of the Country Hour today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Belinda.
Peter Nash, he is the Industry Development Officer for WA with Stock Feed Manufacturers Council of Australia. It is 29 past 12. On the text saying that once this dry spell has subsided, the government should reinstate tax incentives for the construction of fodder and feed storage. It would be a wise investment to help good businesses weather the next hard spell rather than bail out the same few over and over again. The text is 0448 922 604. And because of the dry seasonal conditions, the state's main grain handler, the CBH Group, just wanted to remind growers that they can access their unsold grain warehoused in CBH's system, or of course purchase grain through the marketing and trading division. Only a select number of sites will be available to access your unsold grain, and that's going to depend on when the grain is required, the volume, and the fumigation protocols. Most commodities will be available, however, not all sites have access to all commodities and grades, and the outturn fee for all warehouse grain is going to be $8.90. per tonne. CBH says if you want to access your warehoused grain, you can submit a site outturn request through LoadNet or contact the Grower Service Centre. It is 12:30. Jonathan Beale is here with an update on the news headlines.
Thanks, Belinda. The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, has announced more than $925 million in Commonwealth funding over 5 years to financially support people fleeing violent relationships. The $5,000 payment is designed to help remove the financial barriers that prevent people trying to escape. The commitment was announced after a meeting of National Cabinet and will be included in the upcoming federal budget. An Albany doctor and local councillor who claimed people sexually attracted to children were part of the LGBTQIA plus community has won Liberal Party pre-selection. Party members in the state seat of Albany last night chose Thomas Brough as their candidate for the next election. His comments earlier this year prompted the Liberal leader Libby Metham to describe them as bizarre and inappropriate. And a 29-year-old woman has pleaded guilty to unlawfully killing a motorist while speeding and under the influence of a cocktail of drugs. Abby Sheriff was killed when a car driven by Evie Lynn Butterworth hit her vehicle on Kwinana Freeway in Baldivis in January. Butterworth today pleaded guilty in the Perth Magistrates Court to manslaughter. More news, Belinda, at 1 o'clock.
Thank you for that update, Jonathan. 29-1. Still to come, we'll head to Katanning for the results of the sheep market. Tracy Kilner with those details on the yarding and the prices. Almost double the yarding this week, around about almost 8,000 sheep and lambs penned for sale at Katanning today. Tracy with those details before 1 o'clock. And also today on ABC Radio, there's been a real focus on the rising insurance costs. And Nadia Mitsopoulos did a spotlight forum just honing in on that topic earlier today. And we're going to pick up on that through the Country Hour today, because I'm wondering, are they rising so much, those insurance costs, that some of you, some farmers, are choosing to underinsure more than ever before? And is farming getting more and more risky? Let me know your thoughts on that. 0448 922 604. We'll get into that conversation shortly. First, off to the Bureau of Meteorology. Luke Huntington is here today. Luke, let's start with a look at the Southwest Land Division. Richard's going to go through those rainfall figures shortly. But what's in store this afternoon, the rest of the week? What have you got?
Yeah, afternoon, Belinda. So, yeah, there is further rainfall coming for the Southwest Land Division. Some parts expected to get more than others, but there is a thickening cloud band out to the west at the moment. They're producing some light showers across the Southwest Land Division at the moment, very isolated with the odd thunderstorm. But as I said, that cloud band is thickening up, so most of the showers will come through later this afternoon and into the evening. So rainfall totals for the rest of today. Sort of the Central West District and through the Wheat Belt, not really too much for the remainder of today, so probably less than a millimetre. As we head into the Lower West District, into the Great Southern Region, down to the south coast between Albany and Bremer Bay, probably picking up 1 to 5 millimetres by midnight tonight. And the sort of the heaviest falls are expected sort of around the southwest Capes area. So southwest about Bunbury to Walpole could pick up around 10 to 15 millimetres by midnight tonight. And then as we head into tomorrow, we do see a cold front approaching, and there is a prefrontal trough associated with that. So the trough's going to sort of keep those showers and thunderstorms going. We'll probably see the heaviest falls around the far southwest tomorrow, probably picking up from the morning period around that southwest West Capes area again. So Bunbury to sort of the Walpole, Windy Harbour area, they may pick up 15 to 25 millimetres, and there are thunderstorms forecast through that area. So the falls are even possible up to 35 millimetres on that Thursday period. So some decent rainfalls forecast for that area. But otherwise, 10 to 15 millimetres as you get east of that area through places like Albany, Mount Barker, Manjimup area. And heading up sort of further inland to lower west into the Great Southern across to just west of Esperance there, 1 to 5 millimetres. But again, the central western wheat belt are probably going to miss out only less than a millimetre. So basically for the next few days, that central west district and the wheat belt only getting sort of a less than a millimetre per day. So only light falls through that area. As I said on Thursday, we do have a cold front moving through. So that'll be late in the day, that cold front. And it'll keep going along the south coast on Friday, just maintaining those showers. But pretty much light falls for the southwest land division on a Friday. The most rainfall would be 1 to 2 millimetres just along the south coast between Augusta and Bremer Bay. And then probably southwest of Dongara to Israelite Bay may pick up less than a millimetre. And then areas north of there, we're not expecting any showers. Heading into Saturday, there is a low pressure system due to sort of continue off the south of the state. So that will maintain showers just near coastal parts, pretty much south of Bunbury, across to Contenning, across to Esperance. But again, the highest falls are going to be only 1 to 2 millimetres along the coast between Augusta and Bremer Bay. So, yeah, much of the rainfall falling today and then into tomorrow.
And Luke, just a sneak peek into the following week. Is there anything looking promising at this stage, early stage?
There's nothing really on the outlook at this stage. So getting up and getting even forward to the sort of the 10th of May, which is probably the maximum we can go out this far. We're still not seeing those sort of significant cold fronts. We're still in this pattern of the high to the south and the trough off the coast. So yeah, nothing too significant after this event today and tomorrow.
All right then. Now let's have a look at northern and eastern parts.
Yeah, not too much going on for the north and east. So, as I said, well, we do have that ridge in the Bight, so it's directing a fresh and gusty easterly flow across the sort of the northern parts of the state, which includes the Pilbara-Kimberley interior region. The southwest goldfields, the very far southwest, may pick up a light shower later today and through tomorrow. Possibly even into Friday, the far southern goldfields may pick up a shower, just as the weak front moves through to the south, but finding up back over the weekend. So apart from the southwestern goldfields, the northern and eastern parts are pretty much going to be free of rain.
Thank you for the details, Luke. Appreciate that. 23-1, Richard Hudson in the studio now to look back at the last 24 hours to 9 o'clock this morning and see who got the rain.
Yeah, there was hardly any of it in the northern or eastern forecast districts. In the Gascoyne, Carey Downs had 5, Ningen Station 12 and Payne's Fine 10. And then in the Eucla, Red Rocks Point topped it with 3 mils and that was it. But a little bit more around in the Southwest Land Division forecast districts. In the Central West, Badgingarra 13, Bindi and Canna East both recorded 5 mils. Canterbury 18, Latham 8, Mora 6, Morrawar 25, New Norcia 15, Perenjori 18, South Holmwood 6, Tardon Hill 16. And then in the Lower West, Bickley 9, Bolgart 12, Chidlow 5, Gidgegan up 10, Julimar Forest the same with 10, Lake Chittering 8, Millenden 8 as well. Minston Park and Moolyabinny 13, Mushay 10, Mundaring 12, New Nile 14, Pierce at the RAF base 10, in Perth around about 8 mils, Tamala Park 12, 2J East 10, Watning 14, Werribee 7, Whiteman Park 9. And then in the southwest there was actually nothing over 2 mils, but in the southern coastal region Ingleburn recorded 5, and then in the central wheat belt Amory Acres 19, Ballardew 5, Ben Cubbin 6, Beverley 14, Bonnie Rock 6, Bonnie Rock at the Deep Erd Station 12, Cadoo 15, Kalgee 12, Cunderdin 6, Dalwallinu 10, Doodlakine 6, Doongan Peak 10, Goodlands 5, Hines Hill 6, Jeroma 5, Condit 6, Corder and Long Forest both recorded 11. Meriden had 5 mils at one of the reading stations at the Deep Erd. Mount Hardy 8, Mount Noddy 10, Mount Westdale 16, Nanginan 5, Northam 8, Quadney 6, Quiriding 5, Redlands 14, Whale recorded 7, Wongan Hills had between 22 and 27 mils, and that station that recorded 27, that was the top for the state. You don't hear that very often. Wongan Hills, highest rainfall reading. Woburn 7, Yangadine 10, Nattering 12, York 6 and York Rakine 8. And then in the Great Southern Region, Brookton 5, Bullye 10, Colorado 5, Coondee 11, Hyden had 5 to 6 mils, Coolin 6 to 9 mils, Queda 8, Pingerley West 6, and Wickapen recorded 5 to 8 mils. When I say a range, it's normally because there's a few rain gauges in that area. So for Wickapen, for instance, there are 3 of them, and they recorded between 5 and 8 mils. But, Bell, insurance certainly is a very hot topic today, and it has been in the last few weeks and even the last few years, because insurance costs in Australia have risen by more than 10% in the last 2 years, and some insurance costs have actually risen by an even greater amount than that. There's a story on the ABC News website at the moment which explains why insurance costs have risen so dramatically. From my understanding, it's partly due to recent global weather events and because insurers' costs have gone up. But if you just search ABC News and insurance, you'll find that story. But Andrew Hall is the CEO of the Insurance Council of Australia, and he's worried many people in rural areas are no longer able to fully protect themselves against disasters like bushfires, floods and cyclones.
The data we use mostly is from APRA, who keep an eye on the number of policies in force. And from that, we can extrapolate whether year on year there is a growth or a decrease in insurance policies in Australia. We're not seeing an actual decrease in policies. We know that people work very hard to maintain their insurance coverage. But what we're more concerned about is underinsurance, where people don't have enough cover if the worst happens, to be able to pay for their home, to be put back into the position it was before the event. And underinsurance is driven by a range of factors, including premium inflation, the inflation around building materials, the cost of rebuilding a house and the like, from what you anticipated to have been maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And this is further exacerbated by the need to build back to higher standards if you're in, for example, a bushfire or a cyclone area. So these are all factors that contribute to what we call a protection gap.
So Andrew Hall says when it comes to future planning, we should take into account what's happening in other countries.
We've seen in other markets around the world, like California and Florida, that have very similar profiles to Australia in terms of peril risks like flood and bushfires, as well as cyclones. A growing population has been left vulnerable and exposed. In fact, in California, some of the major insurers are no longer offering new insurance policies for home and contents. We desperately need to avoid a scenario where insurance is not sustainable and insurers are pulling back. We want to make sure that where we understand the risk in this country, we're dealing with it. And it is an expensive challenge. It's not an easy one. Governments working with insurers and banks and other people are going to need to make some pretty big decisions around how we fix up past mistakes, but also how we make decisions around future planning and the like.
Andrew Hall is the head of the Insurance Council of Australia. You can read more on his comments and on that whole story. It's quite an in-depth investigation into it by ABC climate reporter Jess Davis. Just search ABC News and Insurance and you'll find her story. But Michael O'Callaghan farms at Karoo, about 250 kilometres north of Perth, and he's deputy chair of the WA Grains Group, which recently released a report saying farm input costs have increased by as much as 72% in the last 6 years. And he was on the Country Hour recently saying one of his biggest cost increases has been insurance.
Insurance has gone up over 300% in that time. Personally, our insurance has gone up 25% in 1 year. That's our, like our farm pack insurance. So
everything, yeah,
sheds,
basically.
Machinery, workers' compensation. Yeah, the whole package.
And Michael O'Callaghan makes the point that insurance is one of those costs that once it goes up, it doesn't come down. And so he says the big decision many farmers have to make is, do I keep paying more and more for the same coverage?
You know, personally, we'll be looking where we can lower insurance costs, what is insured and how much certain items are insured for, how much we allocate to crop insurance. Therefore, the risk increases. So, and this is what I'm hearing other farmers are talking about doing. So, yeah, the risk increases with these costs, whichever way you handle the situation.
Karoo farmer Michael O'Callaghan, who, as I mentioned, is deputy chair of the WA Grains Group. Well, John Hassell is president of WA Farmers. He's also a grain and livestock producer himself from Pingelly, about 160 kilometres southeast of Perth. John, I know you wanted to be here in the ABC studio in East Perth this morning for that spotlight forum on Nadia Mitsopoulos' show, because it was on this topic. It was all about rising insurance costs. How much of a concern are these rising costs for farmers?
Oh, well, look, Richard, I think they're a pretty massive concern for most people. You know, we had some premiums or examples of the premium account sent through to us, and they're 30-odd% of the, 30% of those costs are, you know, government charges, but it's just an increase by the insurance companies, you know, on an ad hoc basis, it seems to me, that is just pushing our costs, and insurance seems to be a bigger part of that cost increase than anything else.
This morning, one farmer texted into Nadia's show saying, since 2003, they've forked out $840,000 on insurance costs and only claimed $240,000. But even they got a call from the insurance company saying it was no longer willing to insure them. Does that surprise you?
Well, it does actually, Richard, because insurance companies are there to make money, and the way they make money is by paying out on premiums. So if they're going to, well, paying out on claims, I should say. So if they're not going to do the right thing, then they won't be able to sell insurance. You know, if they don't sell insurance, then they won't make money. You know, there's a competition in the marketplace, and you know, other people, I hope, will step up to take their place. And you know, I do know there's a cooperative model one there. I don't know if it's still active, but it used to be there. You know, maybe they're the ones to do that. But you know, it's a competitive marketplace, and if one company does the wrong thing, I'm sure other people will step in.
On this morning's Spotlight Forum, a lot of the attention was on homes and properties as well. But as you know, for many landholders, many farmers, it's not just the home that you're looking at getting insured. It's a package. Do you think most farmers are just wearing the increased cost so they can stay covered for that package?
Well, I think insurance is about what you can afford to lose and what you can't afford to lose. And, you know, if somebody came onto my property and got harmed in a serious way and they needed a huge payout, I probably couldn't afford that kind of loss, so I can't afford not to have that kind of insurance. But, you know, for my motor vehicles, for instance, you know, the likelihood of them all getting bowled over in one hit is pretty unlikely, although we had two go in 2 days, would you believe?
Two uninsured cars only went in 2 days, did they?
Yeah, absolutely. We decided not to insure them. But we also had some advice from our insurance company to say, look, you know, ours is very expensive. You should look at the RAC. So, you know, which was a really interesting thing for an insurance company to do, but they just said they couldn't compete on motor vehicles. So, look, we made the decision on some vehicles to not insure them apart from third party, and some vehicles we moved to the RAC.
If farmers are deciding to drop items from their insurance packages, like what you've just done with your passenger vehicles, let's say, that's a form of underinsuring. That means they're becoming increasingly exposed to risk. How serious is it getting, do you think? Where could we be heading?
Well, I actually think it's probably called insuring yourself, Richard, because, you know, that's a risk you think you can afford it. So you're not creating a risk for yourself if it's something that you can afford to lose. So, you know, it's you know, you're insured for what you can't afford to lose. So, you know, my cars don't matter too much. So I'm not sure I'd want to lose a big truck or a header, but cars, yeah, they're replaceable.
It's not just deciding to get your home or your machinery insured, though, is it? With farming, it's also the livestock and the crops. What sort of insurance have you got? Your grain and sheep as well. What sort of insurance do you have, if you're willing to let us know?
Well, look, we did actually have to have a claim on stolen livestock a few years ago. That was probably on your show. And look, it's only to a certain level. You can you otherwise, if you pay for the full cost of every bit of insurance, you wouldn't be in business. It would be too expensive. You have to self-insure some stuff. So, you know, I don't consider that to be under-insuring. I consider it to be insuring myself or taking the risk myself. You know, if it gets too expensive to do it with an insurance company, then I wear the risk.
You're currently insuring your sheep?
We do. We insure our sheep and we for theft. We insure our and fire as well, probably. And we insure our crops for hail and fire.
So let's say you've got a scenario of a few poor years when it comes to the weather and you're not going so well with your cropping side of things, plus you're exposed with your insurance risk. Are we heading towards a bit of a disaster for some people in some areas?
Well, I don't know. I think most farmers are pretty astute business people and they make the decision on their properties. I mean, you know, I had a friend a few years ago now had insurance on his or had no insurance on his crop for hail, and one paddock got hit, and he thought, oh well, I won't need to insure the rest of it. 2 days later, another paddock got hit. So you just don't know, but it's a risk you've got to take, and you've got to weigh that up. And I think that, you know, farmers will make the right decisions for their businesses, and if they can't afford to insure and they can't afford to lose, they probably shouldn't be in the business.
The state and federal governments are about to release their budgets, John, as you know. When it comes to farmers' insurance, what would you be calling for or hoping for that might be announced in those budgetary announcements?
Well, one that I think is not just for farmers, but I think for every consumer in the state almost, you know, anybody who owns a house or a car or whatever, is stamp duty is a pretty massive extra impost on our insurance premiums. And under the GST system, when Peter Costello introduced it, stamp duty was supposed to go. It was supposed to be a state tax that was meant to be relinquished, and the GST was meant to make up for it. Now, the Federal Grants Commission, through their Horizontal Fiscal Equalisation Program, made it almost impossible for the state to justify dropping stamp duty. But now we're getting a 70% minimum. I think it's an absolutely ideal time. While the state is, I won't say awash with money, but doing okay, is a really good time to consider dropping stamp duty on houses and insurance, on licences and insurances.
It was actually explained in this morning's Spotlight Forum that 20% of your premium on insurance is actually in state and federal government taxes. So even some of the panel members today were maybe appealing to the various politicians to consider dropping one or some of those taxes. Do you think that's a sensible suggestion?
Oh, absolutely I do. I mean, if governments are really seriously pro-business and pro the consumer, then that's one area where everybody could benefit. And, you know, you wouldn't drop it on land transfers, for instance, because that would probably then be a that's the rich you're benefiting. But certainly
We're just losing you there, John. Just whilst we're losing you, I'll just remind the listener about the text number. It's 0448 922 604. Are you also experiencing rising insurance costs? And if so, what choice are you making? Which path are you going down? Are you underinsuring? And are you concerned about the risk you're putting yourself at in future? John, at the start of this morning's Spotlight Forum, one of the panel members said we need to focus on resilience in communities. But if landholders keep up with insurance costs, the trend will be that more and more are actually going to underinsure, and that doesn't seem to be building resilience. What else can be done to build resilience in rural communities, do you think?
Well, I hope my phone doesn't drop out, but look, I think it's about self-insurance rather than under-insurance in that regard. and that's the risk you take. But, you know, it's a much bigger picture thing. You know, there's the fringe benefits tax has had a massive effect on regional areas, and I think that's a whole new debate, and it has been devastating for regional communities, and I think that would be one thing that the federal government should have an inquiry into about how badly it's affected regional areas. And also, you know, the live trade is another one that's already having a devastating effect.
This is the Country on the ABC WA. John Hassell is here today. He's been talking about rising insurance costs. But, John, I'm glad you could just hang on a little bit longer, and I hope your phone holds out, because earlier in the hour we heard from the owner of a trucking company in the southwest of the state, and she was saying that she's basically going to run out of hay in about 6 weeks' time, so she won't be able to make any more deliveries after that to the customers that really need it. And I was wondering about, you know, getting hay from interstate. So I've asked DPIRT about that this morning, and in fact they've just got back to me at this minute on email saying that DPIRT has received no applications to import hay from interstate, and that any hay from interstate would have to satisfy strict import requirements to protect WA from the introduction of invasive weeds and seeds. What do you make of that, considering that we're just about out of supply?
Well, I think it's a very valid concern, Belinda, because if we bring in, you know, extra weed seeds and diseases, that's just going to create a whole new pile of risk for us. So I think it's a very valid concern.
And so then what's the situation? How do we handle a situation where we're possibly running out of supplies in 6 weeks' time?
Well, I think there's a lot of grain in the system still, as Peter Nash said. I think the pellets are a possibility that could come from the eastern states. If they're flush with grain, then they could bring pellets back across here, which are heat treated. So that could be a possibility. But I think, you know, potentially introducing a whole lot more disease and weeds is not a very sensible option.
Yeah, so you're pretty happy with that. You'd rather not have those hay imports coming from interstate.
Absolutely.
And John, just to wrap up, what are you hearing from farmers at this point? And, you know, the announcements that we've heard from the Dry Season Task Force, it's only been up and running for a couple of weeks, but we've already got an $8.6 million package from the state government. Are you happy with the progress to this point?
Well, I think so, Belinda. That's aimed very, very squarely at the people in the southwest of the state who have run out of water and run out of feed, who haven't in the past prepared themselves like we've had to out in the wheat belt. So I think, you know, it's not too much, but I think it's an adequate start.
And what are you hearing from the farming community at this point with just how they're dealing with the dry seasonal conditions?
Well, look, people are still managing. I mean, it's a struggle, but they're managing, and hopefully it'll rain very soon. I mean, some people in the state had some good rains already, which is quite fantastic for them, but the southwest certainly needs some more rain. I think it would be, be fantastic if it rains, but I think we can manage. There's still straw around the place. There's still pellets from the eastern states. I think, look, most importantly, if people are struggling, they should talk to a mate. I think we can get through this.
John, really great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Belinda.
That's John Hassell. He is the president of the WA Farmers Lobby Group here in WA. Richard?
Yeah, Bel, we've just got this text in from Ron. He was the one who texted into Nadia's Spotlight Forum this morning saying about the amount of money that he'd forked out in insurance costs. I think it was about $840,000, and they'd only claimed about $240,000, and then they were told by the company that they were no longer willing to insure them. He's just written in to say, we've since found insurance, but we're told by the company that they had reached their limit for our district. We now insure for cost plus a small profit on a good year, and in a poor season try to insure the whole crop. It is interesting, though. You think of the amount of money that that insurance company made, and then just ring him up and say, hey, don't need your business anymore.
Incredible position to be in. Thank you for that, Richard. It is 2 minutes to one. Let's get to the markets now, because almost 8,000 sheep and lambs were penned for sale at the Katanning market today. Now, that's up 3,192 from last week's numbers. Tracy Kilner, good afternoon. That is a big jump in the numbers today.
Numbers almost doubled for a total yarding of 7,912 mixed quality sheep and lambs. An improved yarding from last week saw prices fluctuate, with good runs of heavy lambs selling to $106, while the lightweights eased with limited interest from restockers. Live export was active on the mid-weight range lambs, paying from $55 to $90 a head. Heavier mutton remained mainly firm, with a weightier yarding of Weathers selling to $55 a head. The lightweight lambs under 16 kilos carcass weight sold to $58. Weights under 18 kilos carcass weight made from 65 to 85. Trade weights returned $71 to $100. Heavyweight lambs sold to $106 a head. A mixed weight and quality range of ram lambs sold from $5 to $70, mainly to processors. A smaller yarding of merino hoggets made from $2 to $49 for Weathers and from $10 to $34 for the ewes. Store ewes sold from $1 to $25, medium weight sold to $37, and the heavyweight ewes over 30 kilos carcass weight returned from $34 to $41. Heavy merino Weathers gained, selling at $34 to $55, while the mature rams eased, making from $2 to $24 a head. This has been Tracy Kilner for Meat and Livestock Australia's National Livestock Reporting Service.
Tracy, thank you for that. David has just texted in response to V&V Walsh's $50 million cold storage facility, which was officially opened yesterday. David says, I hope V&V Walsh has supplies of extra sheep organised for this expanded abattoir. We sold half our breeding ewes to Fletcher's last month, so no lambs next year from them, and the remaining half are not mated, so no lambs from them either. Good luck getting supplies next year. And this on rising insurance costs, we just trimmed what we insure by about a third. I agree with John Hassell. Get rid of stamp duty. Good to talk to you today on the ABC right across WA. It is news time. It is 1 o'clock.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.